Deborah Jacobs entered a different world when she married the Palestinian diplomat who became Yasser Arafat's senior advisor and spokesman, Marwan Khanafani. When they met, she was a Lebanese-American college student from Long Island. He was working at the UN. Deborah Khanafani's marriage, divorce, and child custody battle are the subject of her memoir, Unveiled, How an American Woman Found Her Way Through Politics, Love, and Obedience in the Middle East. The book is also about her friendships with women who were married to Arab leaders, including Sua Arafat and Queen Dina of Jordan. Deborah Khanafani has been the director of international productions for the Palestinian Broadcasting Corporation and now serves on the boards of several Israeli-Palestinian peace organizations and is involved in conflict resolution programs. She lives in New York and L.A. Deborah Khanafani, welcome to Fresh Air. Let me start with what is probably an obvious perception, which is that your ex-husband was at the forefront of what he would certainly describe as a liberation struggle, and yet he was very restrictive in what freedoms he would allow you as his wife. What are some of the things that he did not want you to do while you were married?
Well, I think basically he wanted me to disconnect from my old life and all the things that I enjoyed in my old life, including my friends and my interests. I grew up in New York City. I grew up in a home with a father that loved life. He loved being out at restaurants every night. We were always in the theater. I was in museums constantly. And this love of culture was something that my husband did not share, and certainly in terms of Western culture. And I realized later that it was something that is not uncommon among people in the Middle East, where they feel like they've been occupied by European or British countries, and they don't have this appreciation of art that comes. They see them more as the oppressor. And he didn't share that love with me for those things. And I think he felt they were a threat to him, that it meant that I wanted to live more in my old life. I think he saw this very clear distinction that I had one life before I met him, and then after I met him, I was supposed to have this other life, which revolved around him. And all the things I was supposed to leave behind, such as friendships and interests, couldn't trickle over into the new life. So even seeing a friend became very difficult. And he was very aggressive when old friends of mine would call on the phone or they would come to visit. He'd be insulting, and it would be very uncomfortable. And essentially, he would win because I wouldn't want to invite those people back or continue those relationships.
Do you see his restrictive attitude toward you as just being a sign of his personal possessiveness, or do you think it's a larger cultural issue?
I think it's both. I think that it's his own personal possessiveness, but I think he comes from a culture that allows that to happen without it seeming abnormal. And he does worry a lot in general, and he's like that with my children as well. So I know it is part of his personality. He always wants to know where everybody is and that everybody's safe. And I sort of realized why he's like that when I was writing this book. I learned things about him while writing the book, and I was able to understand that he had lost so many people in his life, close friends, his brother, his niece.
His brother was assassinated.
His brother was assassinated. His niece was also assassinated. She was in the car that was blown up with him. And looking back more at his history, I started to realize why he was driven by fear and had this control of wanting to know where everybody was and that everybody was safe.
Your husband, Marwan Khanafani, was with the Arab League when you met, but he became one of Arafat's closest advisors.
Yes.
Once he became a close advisor to Arafat, how did that change the security situation in your home?
It really didn't. There was no fear. We never had any fear. Sometimes we would get visits from the FBI who would want information about people, and we really didn't know what they were asking us. So that changed quite a bit.
You briefly lived in Ramallah. This was before the Second Intifada. You left just as, like, moments before that started.
Yes.
I guess I'm interested in hearing what your impressions of Ramallah were like then, when things were much more hopeful, compared to what they're like there now.
Mm. You know, somebody recently asked me if I'd want to go back there now, and I said I would really be afraid to. I think it would be devastating. When I first went to Ramallah, I was so moved by the hopefulness, by the building that was going on. Everywhere you looked, there was something new opening up. People were looking for a new life, a new way of being.
And this was shortly after the Palestinian Authority was created and Palestinians were taking control of the territory?
Exactly. It was exactly then, at that time. And foreign money was being poured into the area. I won't say being poured in, but was going into the area. Expatriates were coming back. People were building houses. There were even wine stores opening up, little restaurants that were modeled after little European restaurants. There was just a fantastic mood and a very hopeful mood at the time. And now, with the wall being up and things just being destroyed and people living under curfews, it's just a whole different place now. And I think it would be very upsetting to see.
My guest is Deborah Canafani, the author of the memoir Unveiled. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest, Deborah Canafani, is the author of a memoir about marrying and divorcing Yasser Arafat's chief political advisor and spokesperson, Marwan Canafani. Her memoir is called Unveiled: How an American Woman Found Her Way Through Politics, Love, and Obedience in the Middle East. Canafani is an American of Lebanese descent. So you divorced in America. You were married under American law and divorced under American law.
Mm-hmm.
But then your husband moved back to the Middle East.
Yes.
Took the children with him.
Well, he didn't take them with him right away. I had the children with me all the time in the United States until they went to visit him one summer.
But then you came up against custody laws.
Yes, and that was quite a shock to me. And I really, really didn't know that I would not be permitted to have my children back. I probably should have been more familiar with those laws, but I wasn't. I figured I'm an American. He is an American citizen. I was divorced. I had these rights, and I went there assuming that I would be able to keep those rights.
Why couldn't you?
Well, because there were no reciprocal agreements, and really I was subject to the Islamic laws that ruled the West Bank.
And what were those laws pertaining to custody?
Yes, and under those laws, once children are a certain age, I believe it's 7 years old for a girl and 9 years old for a boy, and that does vary from country to country. The father has the right to the child. And part of that is because they feel if the mother remarries, the worst thing would be to have a little girl living in a home with a strange man. And so that is one of the reasons that men get custody. Another reason, I believe, is just because it's an easy way to control women, because the woman cannot ask for a divorce in that country. So the woman is always told, either do what I say or I'll divorce you. And she knows that if she's divorced by this husband, that she will also lose her children. And that's a huge threat to hold over a woman, and it's used all the time.
How did you end up regaining custody of your children?
Well, while I lived there, the situation was status quo, where he did have custody of them and I could visit them. But then at the end, what happened was there was an uprising. The Intifada of 2000 happened. And my children were eventually evacuated into Jordan. And while they were there, my ex-husband had to go back into the Gaza Strip and see Arafat, So my children were left in Jordan with his new wife, who was also an American. And I begged her and begged her to send the children back to me because he refused to. She said to me, I would consider sending them, but I don't even have an American passport. He brought them here with Palestinian passports. So they had no parent, no passport. They were in a foreign country. And at that point, I called the State Department. My cousin Donna Shalala was in Clinton's cabinet. And there was one plane that was leaving the next day, and that would be the last plane out of Jordan back to the United States. And everyone worked overnight to get my children passports. And I got a call back finally in the morning that the passports had been issued and my children would be put on that plane. And my ex-husband did not know that this was taking place. So there was also that fear that he might appear back into Jordan and prevent this. So it was just nerve-wrenching until they finally got on that plane and they landed in the United States.
And what about your husband? What was his reaction when he found out that you had arranged for the children to fly to the United States and stay with you?
Well, his reaction was really denial that there was a problem that was going to be long-lasting. So he immediately told us all that, okay, this is okay, but just for a few days, I'm going to be bringing them back to the Middle East. I'm not going to help you financially so that they can be there with you. We were staying with my mother. It sort of kept us in a state of not knowing what the future would be at a time when I think my children really needed a sense of security. So that made things more difficult. And he kept calling and saying the political situation was going to blow over and everything would be fine. But yet we were watching the news every night and seeing tanks rolling in and more missiles being shot. And there was nothing to indicate that this situation was going to get any better. Finally, he admitted that perhaps the area was too dangerous to bring the children back to and finally agreed that they could stay in the States with me and he would help us.
You're involved in conflict resolution groups working for conflict resolution between Palestinians and Israelis in the Middle East. You're on the board of several organizations that are conflict resolution organizations. How did you get involved in conflict resolution?
Well, I've always been interested in what happens between people. I studied psychology. I am always amazed when people that can't get along finally find a common ground and things can change between them. And when I saw this in action, and it really began when I met Dr. Arafat, who was Yasser Arafat's brother, Fethi Arafat, and we became friendly, and he was holding these salons on occasion at the Palestinian Red Crescent, which is a hospital in Ramallah. And I started going to those, and I started seeing Palestinians and Israelis meeting every Sunday evening. And I saw how eager they were to learn from each other and to try and find that common ground. And then I started working with him more and more, and we started reaching out and doing these sessions on a more consistent basis. And people from all walks of life would come. And just to see the magic, there's really a magic that takes place when you see people connecting that have been told by their governments or belief systems that they're supposed to be enemies. And so I developed a great belief in the possibility of what can happen when people come together and start trying to coexist.
Where does your husband live now, your ex-husband?
My ex-husband lives in Cairo now, and I don't. As you may know, he was a soccer star in Cairo for 10 years. He was the goalie for the national team of Egypt. And being a goalie in that part of the world is, a quick road to stardom. So he is really worshipped by the people. And I think he loves being there because of that. And so after this last election, when he lost and Hamas took over, he went to Cairo. And I think he lives with a lot of disappointment about what happened to the political dreams they had. But he has spent this time writing a book about his 20 years with Arafat called Years of Hope, which just came out in Arabic. And so we both have books that have come out at the same time.
Deborah Canifani, her memoir is called Unveiled. You can download podcasts of our show on our website, freshair.npr.org.